Welcome everyone to the third annual Chanukah Chinuch question and answer session. Thank you to Rabbi Yosef Wisnicki for this being his brainchild 3 years ago and rearranging it in the past 3 years. When we talk about Chinuch, one thing that I think we all agree on is that as children, there's no way we could comprehend what goes into our parents being mechanech us, and as we get to turn into adults, we can only then first appreciate what went into our parents raising us. Similarly, to have the Rabbanim here with us makes me think of as we mature, we always appreciate more and more as we see our Rabbanim that are from within our community being sought after all over the from world. We particularly feel gratified that they spend the time that everyone spends with their families, spending with us, that we know we are their family. Thank you to Kosher World for sponsoring the food tonight. We got a lot of interesting questions that came in. I try to categorize them in four categories. Didn't fit in perfectly last year. They fit into better categories, I think. This year, I did notice that the questions were a little bit more theoretical, not as particular, which always comes with an answer that the Rabbanim have to say. Everything is case by case sensitive. So this the questions this year perhaps maybe fit in easier,
doesn't it?
The categories that they kind of landed in was the home atmosphere, questions around the yeshiva and school. There was one question particularly about money matters, and then there was many about hashkafa or theoretical, and then obviously can't go without a category of the Washington rally. So we're going to start off with a few minutes from the Rabbanim introducing introductory remarks, and then we'll move directly into the questions.
I want to welcome Rabbi Kalish to the shul and to thank him for joining us again. The relationship that our two shuls have is something that I and we as a kehila cherish very, very much. And we ask Hashem to continue to allow us to collaborate and to work together and to continue the friendship, the brotherhood that we have. L'hagdil Torah l'adira. I was thinking about Yosef HaTzadik this week. There's a fascinating Sfas Emes that comes up in a few places, that the Sfas Emes describes that Yosef was really very, very much removed from his brothers. He really very much, you know, he was a very much, in a certain sense, his Avodah was in a much more derhaibin a place. He compares Yosef's Avodah to Shabbos and the brothers' Avodah to the weekday. It's a different type of avoda. No, neither one is more important than the other one, but they're different tchum of their avoda. And he says that when Yosef started to have dreams that he was going to be shaylit on the brothers had a problem with that because they didn't think that a leader that's so in a different tchum of avoda could properly lead people that are dealing with the chayil type of avoda, with the types of avoda, with the oretz type of avoda, with the types of avoda that involve struggles and growth and dealing with the nisyonos of this world. And Yosef HaTzadik was in another place. He said the hashgacha made it that they threw Yosef into a bar. The bar represents Yosef HaTzadik being put into a place of nisayon, of darkness, of difficulty, because he couldn't be mesiaches as a leader to the brothers if he didn't have a tfis of that form of avoda. Right before he becomes a melech, it says vayiritzuhu min habar. They took him out of the bar. Of course, practically it's a different bar, but the Sfas Emes says that in musag, He spent time in the bar, the nisyonos, the difficulties, the struggles, and then vayiritzuhu min habar, when they took him out of the bar, he was ready to take his place as a manig of Klal Yisrael. And this is something that I appreciate so much, and it touches me, and it has always moved me and encouraged me to grow about spending time with Rabbi Kalish and listening to his Divrei Torah. is that it's a unique blend. There are people that are very, very derhoibin and tremendous yiras shemayim and tremendous vision, but they have a hard time speaking our language and understanding our lives. There are people that are very, very good at understanding our lives, but they find themselves more down here, and therefore there's less of this lift. There's less of this pull bringing us upwards. It's a unique type of leader, and it's the reason why our community has gained so much, and every single person who's been mechanech in this community and in many places over the world has gained. Many of Rabbi Kalish's Talmidim who are Rabbeim are here today, that we've gained from this nekuda of of being able to live in that stira, being able to live with both sides of it, being able to really, really sit down here with us, but at the same time to also v'roishay magia hashamayim, to be able to lift us up, to be able to have the derhoibenkeit, to be able to pull us upward. And that's personally something that from day one, from 24 years ago, something that if I had to try to put into words a certain dimension that I feel like I always grow from, that's what it is. And I'm excited. I was telling my family today that I'm excited to, and some of us were talking over the week, I'm excited to sit by a Q&A, and Amir Tzashem, I'll do my best to answer the questions, but I will do what I always do by a Q&A. I will allow Rabbi Kalish to set a vision and to bring us up, and somehow we've had the siyata d'shmaya that when that happens, that we've been doing this type of shir, Baruch Hashem, for many, many years, we've had the siyata d'shmaya to be able to build and to work together and to find the words, to be able to formulate a conversation that, Amir Tzashem, we should all be able to feel touched and included by that conversation. Yashar Koach, Rabbi Kalish.
First of all, thank you to Rabbi Sonnenschein. The kind words now and the chizuk always, the friendship means a lot to me. And Rabbi Sonnenschein's a friend who has impacted me. It's a friend who's a Rebbe to me, who's impacted me a lot over the 24 years, 25 years of our friendship. And I've been impacted, my children have been impacted. And so the kind words now are appreciated, and all the chizuk over all the years, and the teachings, is very, very beautiful friendship and matters a lot to me. I love the chevra that we're zeichet to have. After I got over the initial anxiety, the Q&A, and your first rush of thoughts, my thoughts are sitting down to this Q&A. Just, I love the chevra we have, is so sincere. Sometimes you come into a Q&A like the pressure is to say something controversial, make it gishmak. I'm sitting here very not feeling that way. I'm actually feeling that we're part of a sincere group, chabura of sincere people. Our chaburas are tremendously linked. It's interesting how connected we are in all different ways. I see in the crowd the Gadazman Mishpacha, their children are in the yeshivas from the top, from the most special. I was talking to my son about David Steiging. We were talking this week about it. Rai Sonnenschein saw him and saw right away. And David is extremely close to the Rav, Rai Sonnenschein. His parents are Talmidim. The Rebbeim in the yeshiva by us, and many of the people watching on Zoom, and there are plenty of people here live, Baruch Hashem, and watching live, and many, many people are impacted by the Masifta. The Rebbeim in the Masifta, right, with Snicky, who organized this gathering, is a Talmud Mufak, somebody who for years and years and years has learned by the Rav, by Rai Sonnenschein Shlita, Rabbi Shapiro, for many years, is a Talmud of Rabbi Sonnenschein. Rai Glazer is a Talmud and a Mispalel here. The link of our communities, my own children, Azeichet, have sat with Rai Sonnenschein, sought counsel by Rai Sonnenschein, gone on walks with Rai Sonnenschein. Just the beautiful connection of the kill and the sincerity that we're Zeichet to. It's a Yantav Lohayde Salahal. We have a tremendous chus, both everybody here present to be part. Shua Ruath made a bris this morning, Baruch Hashem. He just described, and it got emotional, the community that we're zeichet to have. Sincere people, mivakshim, honest. It feels so beautiful to be amongst such a chevra. So to sit down, honestly, the Q&A is an opportunity. We all care about the chinuch of our children. and to discuss and bring out points and gain chizuk and encouragement in chinuch habanim, choosing yeshivas for our kids, all the topics that were brought up here that are beautiful to speak about. The Yontif of Chanukah is something, is the very word to be mechanech is in it, the Chanukah of the Beis HaMikdash, but the word chinuch is there and is thought of in terms of nerish ubeisai, lighting a fire in the home. So it's really, I thank every single person for being here. I thank every person for being part of a sincere, authentic chabura. And we should have together, siyata d'shmaya, that tonight should come out, Aliyah and Ruchnius. I was talking to my son on the way here. We were talking what people want. It's not the type of chevra looking to come home. Like, there was good kind, they got into a big fight, if that happens. Excellent, that would be so gishmak too. But actually people who just want it, we all want to grow. We could have had together tonight a Chanukah Masiba and sang, and maybe one year that we'll sing Zmiris. Maybe at the end we'll sing Zmiris also. I'd actually look around and wouldn't mind singing. I see Chaim, maybe we could do a Zemer or two. But the fact that we're coming together to talk in Yoni Ruchnis, and this is the forum that we could all walk out hearing Divrei Torah, Divrei Chizuk. So let's get on with it.
So we'll start with the first question, but actually one question that came in before that's on the questions that are on the sheet was, why is this scheduled smack in the middle of bedtime? So that person couldn't make it here tonight. So the first question is, my husband loves to learn, but doesn't have so much time due to family work and communal responsibilities. Is it better for him to learn at home so our kids can see, or is it better for him to learn in shul or yeshiva to get more quiet time? Esther Blue Ridge had home court advantage, so.
First of all, I found this a few times with the questions that I absolutely, absolutely love the question. I love getting a question from someone who writes, my husband loves to learn. And that the husband and wife are working together to be able to find time that he should be able to learn properly, that family is, they'll be okay. We could try to answer the question, but to be honest, I'm not worried about them. A wife that sends a question like this, I'm not concerned.
We're gonna listen to Rabbi Kalish. Okay?
Is it better for him to learn at home so our kids can see, or is it better for him to learn in shul to get more quiet time? I just want to add to the tzdadim of the question. I want to add a point. And that point is that you wrote that the tzad to learn in yeshiva is to get more quiet time. And certainly when someone's learning at home, it's easier for that for them to get disrupted, and it's harder to learn with the kviyas, and some people concentrate better in yeshiva. I would just add to the mix of the question. Instead of answering it, I want to add to the question that for a husband who works the whole day, and very often the environment that the husband is feels isolating. Especially nowadays, those that are out in the workforce, we feel a little bit isolated. It could be a very, very, very healthy part of a husband's day to go to yeshiva or to go to shul, not just because it's a place that he could concentrate, but it's important for him to interact with other B'nai Torah and to sit with other people like him, like we're sitting here tonight, and to be able to see Chaverim and to get the boost and the chizuk. And it could be that the husband that comes home after a seder of learning in yeshiva will be more motivated and more engaged and more on fire, because he's not, the whole day he may be keeping himself going. And then when he goes to yeshiva at night, then he's able to allow others to get him going and others to be mechazikim. And that's a very, very powerful cheshbon. I also want to point out, I know it sounds like I'm saying the tzad of learning in yeshiva. The truth is I'm not saying either tzad, because there are so many cheshbonos. But I just want to point out that if a husband goes to shul or yeshiva at night to learn, and he learns well, and he's connected and excited about what he's doing, the children won't suffer, because Sfarim will be out at home anyway. The learning of a husband is not just the hour or the 2 hours or the half hour that he has time to learn. It's a lifestyle. It's a way of speaking. It's an attitude. It drips out from all different areas of their lives, and the children absorb that. So of course, I myself have very, very early memories of my father learning by the dining room table. And I think that that's a very, very important part of my chinuch. It's a very, very valuable thing. But I think that if a husband has a seder in a yeshiva or a shul that's energizing, we'll be able maybe to chap both sides of the question.
Thank you, Rabbi Sonnenschein. I want to read one part of the question, a beautiful question. Is it better for him to learn at home so our kids can see? Or is it better to learn in shul and get more quiet time? So I want to address that part of learn at home so our kids should see. I would like to re-ask the question. It's a beautiful question. But I'd like to say, should I learn at home because it elevates the home? And we say kids seeing, there's Torah near my child. I want to suggest, not answering the question, but the nusach of the question, that we should be very careful that chinuch is not all about what we show our kids. What the reality matters the most in the world. The impact on our children is not what we show them, but what we are and what the realities are. So I'd like just to read, when you say, should I learn there so my kids see me learning, as if like I'll fool them or our kids know who we are. And so I'd like to like frame the question. It's such a strong question. Should I learn at home so my house has Torah in it? Because it's beautiful. It lifts up the whole house to have Torah in it. Should I learn at home so my kid, if they're playing a few feet away from Torah, Rabbi Sonnenschein described his father, the impact of his father learning by the dining room table. I can't speak. I don't know if the chesh was Rabbi Sonnenschein should see. It's impactful to be near Torah. It's impactful to be near Torah. And he was impacted by the Torah learned. It's elevating in a very real way. I would typically try to stay away from cheshbonos. What do I show my kid? How do I? I would really try to stay away from that mentality. I would beg people to stay away. The reality is what matters most. And the, making the reality good. So the father's question, should I learn at home now? Rabbi Sonnenschein mentioned the second point that I want to talk about this question, but the first point would be very important to me in all of chinuch. Because there's so many things we could do. Show the kids that, show them this. Please understand, our kids understand our essence. They know deeper and know more. And the impact on them is most based on reality. So the question I'd reframe, should I learn at home? Because it's meraimim to have Torah in the home. It's meraimim my children that they play in the vicinity of Torah. And the impact it has on them, not because I showed them something, because there was a truth to that, or to learn in shul. I think that's an amazing question. I wanted to say on this question what Rabbi Sonnenschein said and make a point of this, that in order to be strong in the home, this chashuva wife describes that the husband has work, family work, and communal responsibilities. What Rabbi Sonnenschein said, that the man himself, to be there present for his family, to be a big time learner at home, to be there for his work, to be there in his community with a fire, has to also receive some fire. And that is something important for us all, to receive fire so we can keep giving fire. So there are times to learn together with a chabura, to go to a shir that a person can absorb, and it gives him more power and strength to do the other jobs. So even if the person would say learning at home, they want to bring Torah to the home, that is a tremendous mila, but to be that person who can generate the Torah at home, to be that person who could show up at work as a tzaddik, as an erlich person, to be that person who has communal responsibilities, a person may have to take and receive and be inspired, that is a big mila of a Torah in yeshiva, of a Torah at a shir, of a Torah in a shul, that's something to consider as well.
The next two questions came in around mesiftas, one about the decision of where to send the mesifta, and one about a question once he already made the decision. So I'm going to read them both together. The first question is, my eighth grade son has Baruch Hashem been told that he has the ability to get into a top mesifta. He puts top mesifta in quotes. In assisting with his decision, is there any way to consider how each yeshiva will drive his holistic growth? emotional, social, self-knowledge? Or do we just assume that focusing on gaining the highest level he can in Torah will Mimela bring all those things with him? That's the first question. The next question is from a person who already sent. My child is happy in Masifta, but I don't like the Hashkafa they are teaching him. How do I balance giving over what I feel is correct is the correct way and not disrespecting the Rebbe, Rosh Yeshiva, or the Yeshiva? Or should I not be speaking against it as I choose that as I chose that Yeshiva?
I'd like to, they're both very good questions. I want to specifically talk a little about the first question. And I want to say for us all 2 points. We all have children and go off to Masiftas. 2 points about choosing a Masifta. That one, that it has to be a place that the child is going to connect to his Torah. There's learning Torah, but it's not math, science. It's not the place that teaches the best science, where my son is going to connect to his Torah. The emotional well-being of my son matters to that sugya, because if he's broken, not happy, just emotionally unsupported, he's not going to connect to the Torah that he's being taught. The goal of Limud HaTorah is for a person to be emotionally and deeply and profoundly connected to the Torah that he learns, not a chamar naisei svarim. So in choosing a yeshiva for our youngsters, it has to matter a lot that he's going to be emotionally connected, he's going to be comfortable, and he's going to connect to the Torah that he learns. That has to be, and each of us have to, in that searching for a yeshiva, that is the top yeshiva. We're not people, we're experiencing on the news about top universities. What's called top and not is a big topic. So a top yeshiva is a place where the B'nai Torah who learn there are emotionally connected to the Torah they learn. And that's how I would define a top masifta. And certainly you should send your son to a top masifta, a place where when he learns Torah, he's going to connect. So careful research, are the Bachram in that yeshiva emotionally healthy? Are they comfortable? Do they get emotional nourishment? Is there nurturing there? Those are things that have to be checked out very well. If they're not there, I would certainly not consider it a top place for this specific boy. If this boy won't be nurtured, I would run. I would not send him there because he will not connect to the Torah he's learning. And the goal is that he deeply connects to the Torah he learns. In terms of a second point on looking for yeshivas, find the Rebbeim. Who's the Rebbe you're sending to? So it doesn't mean that you'll look at all the years of the Masifta, but you look, is there a Rebbe in 9th grade, 10th? Who are the Rebbeim you're sending? It's something that we've a little bit lost sight of, I think, because in Europe, people learned by Rebbeim. That's who you went to learn by, a Rebbe, and you had heard about a Rebbe, and you learned by a Rebbe. I think that's very, very important. I say l'charab. It's not a building, a top yeshiva. Who's the Rebbe is learning by? And is this somebody your son will make as his Rebbe, that it will be a Rebbe for your son? I think that's an important question in looking at yeshivas. It's not the walls that you want to be mechanech our child. It's not even the competitive nature of a group of competitive guys. The chaveira matter, but asei l'charav has to be part of the experience of looking for a yeshiva. So to see and ask ourselves, is this a Rebbe for my son? Will my son accept this? Is there likely that this will be a connection, that he will feel this is his Rebbe? That'll say, there's such a magic when somebody says Rebbe and means that I went to visit with my son, my Rebbe, a week ago. My Rebbe should be gesund. He said he's not well. I went with my son to my Rebbe and the experience was beautiful. And it's decades after I've learned by my Rebbe, and the word Rebbe is magical. The word Rebbe is a very magical word. And we want that for our sons. I say to find the place that'll say Rebbe and it'll almost melt. That'll say Rebbe and you're confident that'll say Rebbe and it'll feel that in 10 years, 20 years, 40 years, that 6 years later it'll say the word Rebbe and magical. Those are the 2 points I'd like to make for that question.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Kalish. I just want to add just a few nekudas The Yisoid, I just want to first of all clarify what Rabbi Kalish said. Just I want to say it a little bit more bluntly than him. Rabbi Kalish said that the emotional, social, and self-knowledge, or however you want to describe the holistic growth, you could correct me if I'm wrong, is absolutely super important and cannot be ignored. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I just want to, sometimes I'm a little blunt. I want to make sure that we said that bluntly. We actually discussed this. We had this question recently in the woman's shiur, and we were talking about this struggle sometimes between wanting to send a boy to a place where the level of learning is much higher and worrying about the emotional care that the boy will get. And, you know, certainly there's a tremendous mila in, you know, the in becoming a big Talmud Chacham, but as Rabbi Kalish said, becoming a big Talmud Chacham who's broken, or becoming a big Talmud Chacham who's like Rabbi Kalish said, a chamor noisei svarim, that's not a help to him or to Klal Yisrael. That's not what Klal Yisrael needs. I just want to point out that, and this is something that's very, very important, that we should know our children. And we have to work to know our children, because not every child has the same, we're not all exactly the same. And different children need different, every child needs emotional support. I don't believe, you ever met someone that doesn't? Every child needs emotional support. But not every child needs emotional support in the same overt way as another child. Not every child needs emotional support in the same nusach as another child. And we have to work hard to find places for our children that will be the best makim for this child. We don't have a shita about a yeshiva. We get to know a child, and we have to find the right makim for that child. And the other thing that I want to mention is that the emotional and I'm just looking back at the question, the emotional, social, self-knowledge, I just want to be very clear. When you send your children away, you're sending them away to learn Torah, but you are not pater from being their mechanchim. You're still there to teach them. And even if they're away for most of the year, but the role that you have in their life to be there for them, to cheer them on, to be mechazik them, to be an ear to listen to when they're feeling down, to be able to notice if something doesn't seem right. A mother could see her son 6 months, only once every 6 months, and she could chap things that people in yeshiva didn't chap, because she's the mother, and she could see something, and she gets something. So let's not delude ourselves into thinking that when we send our children to yeshiva, we're washing our hands of their chinuch. We're sending them to yeshiva, and we certainly want that Rebbe that's going to have the role, like Rabbi Kalish said. It brought tears to my eyes hearing Rabbi Kalish talk about what the word Rebbe being magical. We certainly want that, but we also want to stay tuned in and focused on the emotional growth of our children, and not say, oh, he's in a yeshiva, he's taken care of. No, there's no replacement for a tati and mommy. There's no replacement. The end of the question said, the other tzad was, should we just assume that focusing on gaining the highest level he can in Torah will memela bring all those things with it? I just want to point out, it's not a terrible hava amina that somebody thought that. And it's possible that there was a time in history that our hearts were open enough and we were close enough to a certain Messiah where the Durocheho Darchei Noyam, where the Tayras Hashem Tamima Meshivas Nafesh, Eidos Hashem Ne'emana Machimas Pesi, Pekudei Hashem Yeshara Mesamche Lev, Mitzvas Hashem Bara Meiras Einoyim, that all of that meant that when someone plugged into Torah, emotional health came along with it. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who wasn't mechadish to learn Musar, he was mechadish to learn Musar in addition to regular Sdarim in Torah. And I once heard from a big Talmud Chacham that before that, of course, they learned Musar. It was just part of their connection to Torah, and part of the Niskatnu HaDoros is that we have to be Miyache time. Okay, this Torah, but in addition to that, I need to be Miyache time for Musar. And it could be that for our generation or for recent generations, that's even more so. We have to be Miyache time and attention about emotional health and emotional growth and is a child suffering and what's going on inside. And to harav of those sugyas, you're saying very good. Perhaps we should be zeicha one day, maybe when Mashiach comes, that we'll be able to plug into Torah And that will just be everything. There'll be the memela, but we'll be so emotional and sensitive and connected with the Dvar Hashem and the Bein Adam LaMakim and Bein Adam LaChaveiro from the Torah itself. But now we need to see that we could identify where the emotional health is coming from. Should we talk about the next question or
up to the
right? What?
It's a totally different nakuda, the next question, really.
Did you want to? So my child is happy in Masifta, but I don't like the hashkafa they are teaching him. How do I balance giving over what I feel is the correct way and not disrespecting the Rebbe, Rosh HaYeshiva, Yeshiva? Or should I not be speaking against it as I chose that yeshiva? Okay, first of all, it's not your fault that you chose that yeshiva. You did your best. You tried. We all work hard. And sometimes we find things in a yeshiva that are hard for us. It's not like you have to carry this einish now that I chose that yeshiva. I'm not sure. I'm speaking to the shayel, okay? I'm not sure what you mean when you say that you don't like the hashkafa. If you mean that there are nuances, there are inyanim in the hashkafa. The general hashkafa is, of course, the hashkafa that you're familiar with and that you're raising your family with. But there's a nuance, there's a certain shita or a certain mahalach that you don't agree with. I would say, give your children more credit than that. You don't have to speak out necessarily everything with your children. As long as we're not, again, the ikker thrust of the place is Torah, and you're a Shemayim and a Mesorah, and the way that we're familiar, the way that's healthy. So I don't hold of this, I don't hold of that. My son comes home from yeshiva, he says something over by the Shabbos table, Rebbe said, and it's a hashkafa, it gives me a little bit indigestion. We have to trust our children. We can't raise children that we close their ears and drum into them our hashkafa about everything in life. I'm not saying this about a yeshiva katana child. Well, a child, once they get into Masifta, they are going to hear things different than the way we raised them. And by the way, sometimes that will be wonderful for them because we don't have everything. And as much as I'm saying we're not off the hook from chinuch, but the yeshivas provide an unbelievable supplement, even in the areas outside of the Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, and the Shir, and all of that. There's a tremendous amount. Maybe there are things that we're not correct about, or that we're doing that could improve. But even if we're wrong, I'm saying even if we're right that they're wrong, and even if it's something that we take an issue with, I don't know that we have to have it out by the Shabbos table that your Rebbe is wrong. I don't know if we need to do that. I don't know if we need to point it out. I suspect, you could ask, my children are here, you could ask them, but I suspect that when they come home and they say something, they will see on my face in a second, like, I didn't like that. And I don't have to say anything. And I move on, you know? And those of us that know Rabbi Kalish, we know that the same thing is true. Rabbi Kalish will say something like, I'm sorry for imitating, Rabbi Kalish will say like, ah. You know Rabbi Kalish does that? Aha. Uh-huh. So us Talmidim of Rabbi Kalish, we know, let me think about that again. If I got that, aha, uh-huh, let me think about that again. We don't need to stuff down their throats. Let's trust our children a little bit more. I apologize.
I'm not going to say aha to that what Rabbi Sonnenschein said. I extremely liked what Rabbi Sonnenschein said. I think that trusting our kids that they could hear different ideas is huge. I wanted to focus on a point to that question that means a lot to me. And there's a sugi here relevant to us and to the chinuch of our kids. The questioner said, my child is happy in Masifta, but I don't like... I want to say... Cynics of a yeshiva sometimes, people will say, but our yeshiva, I know the bachim are happy, but somebody's happy means a lot. All of us in our own ruchnias, my dream for every single person here is that you function in your life with fire, with energy. It is not an external thing. It doesn't mean like you're pushing, there's an chitzonis meris apnimius. When a person hits points that are real, when a person's true to yourself, When a person feels like they're doing what connects to them deeply, what will come out is energy, fire, passion. That's what comes out. We read in the Torah about Avram Avinu, and the Torah says five times Avram Avinu flying around doing chesed, he has touched the deepest place of a person. Our neshama was designed to give, and as such, it was not a trick. The Torah is the pnimius hadavar. As such, Avram Avinu, as an old man who just went through a milah, is flying because he's on fire. You know why he has such an alacrity, such a fire? Because he's living the way he was born to live. I was born for this. I was born for this. When we see our youngsters happy, I have a tremendous respect. There's a certain yeshiva that I have like questions on, and one of my rayas that they're doing things amazing is their students are happy. It's not a minor. My son is happy, but when you're talking as a parent and you see he's happy, my son's learned by a certain Rebbe, and I'm amazed that he's the Rebbe Movuk. They're happy, they're flourishing, they're excited. There's an energy, a passion, a simchas achayim that exudes. Somebody's hitting something real. We're talking about a parent who doesn't fall for a facade of happiness. My son is happy he's found something of that masifta. Respect it, it's not a minor detail. When we are functioning happy is a very big simon on us. When we are functioning, by the way, if we find limited energy, we find in our own lives we're very like schleppy and can't put in days. You have to ask yourself, maybe I'm not letting out talents of mine. We look at different people and some people seem like schleppy and they walk, they're always tired and feel sick always. They should ask, that's an important question. Why aren't you functioning with fire? Are you not tapping into certain inner things, certain capacities, certain deep things in your soul? Because when we tap into ourselves, we function with fire. We're energetic, we're powerful. That's what happens. So the Simchas Achaim is a very important litmus test. It's a very important sign of something. If your son's in a masifta and he's happy, the irony is when people have said in yeshiva, there are less rules, sure, a kid's happy, that doesn't cause happiness. They're happy because he's connecting to some Rebbe. They're happy because there's kivui, there's hope. There's a deep sense of optimism, a deep sense of I'm headed somewhere good. One of the greatest prides I have about our masifta is guys are happy. I would say the work and the sense, the deep kivui, there's hope. There's optimism. There's a sense of I'm finding myself. I'm connecting to a deep place. So in the questioner, it's like says like almost flippantly, if I can pick on the question, my child's happy, but I'm not. Whoa! Why are they happy? What happened? What was touched? What was brought out? There's something big going on. Don't run over that. They're finding something. Why is your child functioning with such a fire? There's something that's been touched. We all know, take away rules and people just sit around, kids are depressed. Take away meaning, people are depressed. My kid is happy, something has been found. Something very, very real typically has been found. It's an important test, it's an important. I look around yeshivas for my sons. What probably, if I would say top two or three things, I look, do the guys look fiery to me? Do they look happy? There is simchas achayim there, because then I sense guys are finding, bachram are finding something there. So I just don't want to dismiss my kid is happy yeshiva, but I think this, and this writer seems to be sophisticated, and to notice your kid is plugged in, I would actually ask, what have they found? And I would say to us all in our own lives, that when we're functioning with big energy at Kufis in our life, that we feel energetic and powerful, those are important things. You've plugged into something. The person who finds meaning and purpose and value functions with tremendous energy, is typically not very tired, not very schleppy, has extra power. I ask myself at times that I feel a little schleppy, I ask, what aren't you plugging? I usually can find it. why I'm not so plugged in. And then, okay, then you have all different physical slowness. The Simchas HaChaim is a very, very good litmus test, and more should be valued to the Simchas HaChaim.
The next question, I challenged whether or not it was chinuch related, but the questioner insisted that it is. So it's a little different. Question number 11. Throughout our history, we have Rabbanim that were put in Cheirin and their Svarim banned. Subsequently, they became considered acceptable and even fundamental to Klal Yisrael, like the Rambam and the Ramchal. Two questions. How did their status change? And number two is, can we somehow apply this logic in advance and foresee the clarification that time may bring and thereby accept the person or the sefer today?
Fascinating, really fascinating question. I want to say something that's important to me about this question that strikes me a lot. If you don't believe in Hashgachas Hashem, so the way you interpret this question, somebody writes a sefer, this is common. Somebody writes a sefer 300 years ago and it doesn't take. And maybe even it's banned and maybe it's ridiculed. 100 years later, 200 years later, like this question we about faced. Their Rabbanim put in Cheirim, their Sfarim banned, subsequently became acceptable. How did their status change? The answer is because Hashem wanted it for when it was supposed to be. We don't look at it that, yikes, it was a mistake. The Rabbeinu Shalom runs the world. I don't think the Hashgacha is that what was a mistake, that it was banned when it was supposed to be banned and learnt when it was supposed to be learnt. As the Rabbeinu Shalom running the world with an exactness. And there's Svarim that can go for a couple of hundred years. It's remarkable. I'm so excited by the question. This question's more dramatic. Banned Svarim. There's Svarim that all of a sudden are learnt. They were written a long time ago, untouched. They stay in Svarim shelves. Then Klal Yisrael just starts picking it up like crazy. There's Ashkacha every generation. Yiftach b'dayrei is kishmuel b'dayrei k'mayshim. Is each dar as a Pesach Hadash. Each dar is its own uniqueness, your own type of way of thinking. And Svarim penetrate. I've observed in my own life that Svarim when I was younger I would put away, and today I just can't put down. And Svarim that when I was younger spoke to me a lot, and today they don't. And we see in our own lives different stages, different ages, when different things, different Svarim and different aspects of Torah resonate by us. These are deep things. So the questioner who asks, like, how did the status change? Because Hashgacha willed that it would change, because it was meant for a certain time. There's Svarim today, we're seeing Svarim. I know a sefer that people learn today that their Rebbeim years ago said not to learn, their Rebbeim said not to learn, and the Rebbeim are quietly learning it now. Today, there's the Hashgacha that sefer is speaking and energizing the Dar of today. And there are many Svarim and many things happen like this. The main thing to attribute is to Hashgachas Hashem. And every generation has a Torah and has leaders that it's very, very exact, sent by Hashem. So the question is a delightful observation. And it's important in our own lives, by the way, I would recommend to my friends. I would say when I met Rabbi Sonnenschein, he was teaching a Torah that I didn't understand. And I say that I said to myself, that's not for me. But I listened a little and heard. And I, b'chesed Hashem, Rabbi Sonnenschein impacted me that he's willing to do new things. One of the things in our friendship, I've seen even in teaching Torah, Rabbi Sonnenschein's risky, not just being safe, teach the same thing, do the same thing, be a little risky and courageous and study this. There's a big Torah. And I say to everybody in Torah, there's a big Torah. There's a big Torah with many tzaddikim and many svarim. And I say, live courageously. and maybe even you were 15 and a certain sefer at that point didn't hit you, maybe you can open up that sefer at 25 and 55 and check again and see, because all of us in our lives see this metzius, that at different stages, different things that we learn impact us in different ways. So the observation of the that in our history we have seen svarim that are put away, and then Klal Yisrael is pulling these svarim off the shelves. There's something that I see about a such beautiful hashgacha, and people, for sure, people have different things that resonate by us. So it's a beautiful observation, an absolutely true observation. I think Hashem b'roi chastoi put svarim, and for different generations we have access to different things. Some of the Torah we have access today, and svarim that we could easily get, by the way, they couldn't get in earlier Doris. They would never be able to access those svarim. Things are so exact, and the svarim we need, this Dar Achrein, this beautiful generation, has svarim that's clearly resonating and attracting and inspiring and uplifting our nation, is a beautiful testament to Hashgachas Hashem. Every Dar has its leaders, and every Dar has its svarim.
Okay, the next question is simply, what advice would you give those starting the Tkufa of Shidduchim? Wide open.
It really is wide open. The Tkufa of Shidduchim is... it really is a tkufa. It's not an easy tkufa, and it's an undertaking. And it's a tkufa that I think it's helpful to look at it as entering another stage in our Avodas Hashem. First of all, it's another stage in terms of taking care of our children. And it's another stage in coming to terms with what our role is in Hashem's world. When someone's involved in Shidduchim, there's nothing like Shidduchim to show you that you have no control over anything. Nothing like it. There's nothing like Shidduchim to show you that Ein lanu lishoyen ela alavinu shabashamayim. You know, the people are working very, very, very hard. And chas v'shalom, I don't mean to take away from that. We're very, very grateful for those that are oisek in Shidduchim. In this room, a lot of times, there are Shidduch meetings that take place, and we're very, very makir toiv, and each amount of ishtadlus is important. But ultimately, if you know what's going on with Shidduchim, Shidduchim is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And instead of going in, and I'm a little mischarit myself, because I went into the parasha of Shidduchim with tremendous trepidation. I know it's hard, and we're doing this very hard thing called Shidduchim. And I went in like that, and I wish that I'd be able to do that again. And be able to go in with a sense that this is an opportunity. When Elul starts, we take that deep breath and we say, okay, we're entering this more intense but very special, joyful, important time of the year. There's an intensity, and we seriously enter it. And person enters Shidduchim, it would be helpful. It says about starting the Tkufa, to start the Tkufa with a sense that I'm entering into a world of Hashgachas Hashem. I'm entering into a world that I'm going to come out of it a different person. And it's my job not to come out of it a more cynical person, not to come out of it a more bitter person, but to come out of it a person that's more dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that sees more clearly that everything is up to Hashem. I think also in Bein Adam L'Chaveri, there's a tremendous opportunity with Shidduchim that we become a little bit, sometimes naturally with Shidduchim, we're looking for what's good for us, and we want to see what's right for me. When we send a boy or a girl out, but with the boys I find this a little bit more. Maybe I just am counseling more boys than girls, but the sense of like, hey, let me see if she's good for me, let me see if it works for me, let me see if that's what I need. And there's a tremendous madrega of being able to recognize that there's someone else on the other side of it. And the shidduch that comes out will be that much more enhanced. I try to tell my bachrim, at least one date, spend the date thinking about, am I good for her? Would I be right for her? Am I what she needs? just to give me the, just to ingrain in me that this is not me going shopping. This is not me, like, do I want this kind of milk? Am I doing the 99 today? No, this is me looking for a person that I'm going to build a life with. And that's something that's nageya to me and nageya to her. She's an oilam mali, and I'm an oilam mali, and we have to see if these oilamis belong together. And if we are mechanech our children to engage in shidduchim that way, then the shidduchim that don't work out are also learning experiences. And they're also something to go to grow from. Very often a boy will sit down with me. I'm sure Rabbi Kalish has had this situation also, where a boy is going out to meet a girl, and he's pretty sure it's not going to happen. Right, it comes up all the time. And we try, I'm saying we because I'm confident that Rabbi Kalish does the same thing, that we try to tell the boy that this is a valuable moment. You're going on this, you're going to meet another human being who has a life, who has something to teach you, you have something to gain from this. The Rabbi Shalom put you here, and you have something to gain from it. And I think that walking in with that kind of mahal, that it's not us against the world, and we're angry, and with the FBI, and we're doing investigations, and we have to find out, and all of that type of talk, and that type of suspicion, and talking about the other side, like the other side, you know that I have this issue that that to bluers, we're the other side. We're the tzatzik and eged. I wish we could be misake that, you know. I think we're both this side. We're both the same side. But like to look at it that way, you know, every once in a while you hear like this heartwarming story where there's a shidduch going on and something's a little tough, and the mother of the boy or the mother of the girl will tell us, I just picked up the phone and called the other mother, enough of this, right? We love those stories because it brings the humanity into it. I'm not saying that that's the way, you know, we should follow the gedarim in general. We should follow the way that we do it, but let's remember that we're dealing with human beings here, with lives. They're also trying. They're also growing. And when it comes to that also, to the investigating and to the looking into, also to do it with a toiv ayin, of course the shidduchim have to work. Of course there has to be the right match emotionally and so on and so forth. But we have to be careful to go into the tekufa of shidduchim with a sense of We're part of one nation. We're brothers and sisters. We're all trying to make this work. The other side is also worried about shidduchim and is also going through this tkufa. In a way, when the other side is in the picture, you're in this together with them, and it's kedai to go in with that type of approach to shidduchim. Just a thought about starting the tkufa.
Thank you, Rai Sonnenschein. I wanna speak, really continue something Rai Sonnenschein mentioned about shidduchim. The question asked about the tkufa of shidduchim. Now, we're all looking, our children and the bachurim, we're looking for shidduch. So the questions about shidduchim speaks about the situations that didn't work out and don't work out. And one thing I want to mention in the parish of Shidduchim is that each two people go on an encounter, each one seeing if this is their wife, this is their spouse. That meeting was bashkacha, that these two people should meet, and to take pride, for a bachur to take pride that he spent time with somebody and the ashkacha had it. If it turned out that they weren't the right zivug, but the Ashkacha had it in a very significant, important encounter, that two people met each other, the responsibility that the other person is better for it, is walking out more respected, is walking out pashut's been impacted. We typically don't send our bachrim to impact the nashim of the world. That's not their task. Men are mekarev the anashim, and Sarah's mekareves anashim, mekareves anashim. Here was a time that a man was asked, that a bachur was asked to go out and speak to somebody and spend time. It's a very holy encounter. There's a tremendous kedusha and holiness to this encounter. Rabbi Sonnenschein said to take it seriously. By me, it's we spoke before about a simchas achayim, that a bachur goes out and a girl goes on shidduchim with a tremendous chiyus. It's a very important and special. And the encounter, and by the way, when it wasn't the right one, but two people met each other, the hopes and the dreams that they're both better off for it. They're walking out a more respected person. They're walking out having met such a wonderful person who in such a dignified way is, so that should be the aspiration to me is one point in going on Shidduchim. The aspiration, both of the bachur, of the girl, both of their thoughts on going out, how important, how special, how happy the encounter is. I think parents could help a lot with this. Not to ever be jaded by it. Sometimes it could be a long journey, but each one to take, I would ask in a serious way, and I understand sometimes people are dating for a while, certainly if it's the parent of the girl, so it could become like another guy's coming, okay, just go to, not take, the taking it, I have a tremendous appreciation, and I think you're teaching, we talked tonight about chinuch, you're teaching tremendous things. It could take a while if that's the plans of Hashem. It takes 3 years. So for 3 years, each encounter is taken with tremendous seriousness, a happiness. There's a mitzvah. We're looking for important things, and it's taken with a certain dignity. It's even our children look to get a nice car to go out with. Little nuance is that it's very chashuv. There's a chashuv thing going. There's something very major going on. This is all surrounding a beautiful mitzvah, this awesome mitzvah, one of the first mitzvahs of the Torah. Everything surrounding it should have a chashivus, a simcha shel mitzvah, and just the class and dignity. So I think that the Rav mentioned there, Rav Sonnenschein mentioned that, I think is wonderful. Rav Sonnenschein is somebody in our city who does tremendous works, and really in all of Klal Yisrael, keeping mishpachas and helping mishpachas be together. The importance of, we're talking about the dream of everybody to have a beautiful home, and we could give that chinuch already from shidduchim. So the seriousness, the importance of it, literally from taking care of it, our children having the right vehicle, every detail of it that's so chashuv and important is something that we could be very part of setting up the appreciation for what the mitzvah that's involved in. I think that's one point I want to make on the topic of shidduchim. The second thing I want to say is that I think trust in gut. This is like something I'm passionate about, and I think the boy and girl should trust their gut. Everybody could say, but it's perfect, you have my gut, I don't feel it. I believe in that a lot. Now I want to say that's a sheet of asachayim. That means somebody has to be very in touch with their inside. It means people should be pneumistic, should be in touch with their own feelings and thoughts. If a person's out of touch with themselves, I don't know if they're in touch with their gut. So it's a whole shita sachayim of a person being a yishvadas person, in touch with what they're feeling. I think people should trust their guts a lot. I put tremendous, I don't make fun. And if I, you know, this has happened, a boy decide, I just don't feel it, that's huge by me. She just doesn't feel it. They could be, but they dated, so I'm just not feeling it. And trust in gut to me is a very, very, very important point. I think Hashem sends us things, and all of us, and trusting ourselves, and by the way, with our children, trusting their gut. They just don't feel it. That matters a lot. I find it very dangerous to tell people not to trust their gut. Very, very dangerous. And I don't think it's true. I've had many, many stories in chinuch in life, trusting, I have a sense, a gut, and I believe Hashem sends us things that we sense. That we send something and Hashem sends us that to us all. The Grun Mishle's Mivur that everybody has a Ruach HaKodesh of sorts. Every single yid. A gut is very, very important. So in Shidduchim, to trust our guts, the boy, the girl, the parents, trusting the kid, I just don't feel it. That matters a lot.
Just want to point out, Rav Kalish, in just the first part, He was Maisif in Akuda in Shidduchim, that the going out and the meeting a girl meeting a boy or a boy meeting a girl, that it's not just that it's important and not just the Bein Adam L'Chaveri that I mentioned, but if you're listening to Rabbi Kalish, it's a Davar Shebe Kedusha, it's a Dvar Mitzvah, it's an important thing. It's, you know, and as Rabbi Kalish was saying it, I got this flood of memories I just wanted to share with the Olam. When I was younger, I did not look at it this way, and I got Musar about it twice, and I deserved it twice because I didn't get the lesson the first time. But I didn't look at it this way. I wish that I would have had the chinuch, the perception to understand this. The first time I got Musar was from my father, and I remember that it was time for Shidduchim, and you know, I'm a Chaim Berlin boy, and we take Yontif very, very, very seriously. And I remember like feeling out with my father that I think that I shouldn't go out on Chol HaMoed. Go out on Chol HaMoed? Chol HaMoed is Harei, it's Yontif. You understand the fallacy there. The way Rabbi Kalish is saying it, I'm engaging in a Davar Shebe Kedusha. This is not like I'm doing, I was looking at it like I'm like this mundane, like b'di'eved, you know, tzairich haguf that I'm going to do. Maybe I shouldn't do it on Yontif. I remember my father telling me a mashal. My father's a sefer, and he was telling me that there was a time that this parnasa was so difficult that he got a psak that he should write mezuzahs on Chol HaMoed. That was the psak that he got. So he told me he was mechazik himself, that it's not like b'di'eved he's writing mezuzahs on Chol HaMoed. His mezuzahs have kedushas Chol HaMoed. So that's what he was telling me. He says, go out, you're being oisik b'mitzvah, and now this mitzvah is a yantavdika mitzvah. Okay, that's for each person to decide whether they're going to go on Chol HaMoed. That's not my point. But my point is the attitude towards it. And the second time I got the lesson was when I was a chassan, because I hadn't learned my lesson. And I became a chassan, in the middle of Elul, the beginning of Elul. And that's a pretty serious time. So what, a chassan and kala just hang out and spend time together in the middle of Elul, in the middle of Tishrei? So my kala asked me if I can come eat the Suda by their house on Shabbos Shuva. So I said something like, maybe Shabbos Shuva we shouldn't eat the Suda together. So my Kala, who I think is listening now, my Kala said, do I have such a bad influence on you that you don't want to see me on Shabbos Shuva? And boy, was that a patch and pun him, you know, like, okay, well, I'm going to rethink that. I'm going to rethink that decision. But the truth is that I think there's an element that Rabbi Kalish is saying that extends into that. Of course, the hanhaga between a chassan and kala needs to be done properly, and it's very, very important, and it helps to have hadracha. Of course, of course, of course. But don't forget that it's a davrsha b'kedusha. Don't forget that. And then we had the other side, because I learned the lesson very, very well. And on Yontif, that Sukkos, we were engaged over Sukkos. So that Sukkos, we ate Yontif Sudas together. Different Yontif Sudas, different relatives. All the relatives wanted to sit with the Chassan and Kala. So a relative came over to me. Oh, actually, even better. A relative of mine went over to my Kala and said, you're spending too much time with your Chassan. You're going to regret it one day. And my Kala called me and like, what are you doing to me? So I didn't know what to do. I did what a Talmud does when such a crisis comes up. I ran to my Rebbe. I was close at that time to Rav Chaim Kiruitz. I ran to Rav Chaim Kiruitz, and I said, Rebbe, I was embarrassed to say this, but I ate sudas with my kala every day of Yontif. And I still remember him going, very good. I still remember that, you know. So that resolved that. So yeah, Shikaya.
Okay, switching gears to younger children. Next question is, my children love our Shabbos table, the schmoozing, togetherness, talking Torah or Ashkafa, etc. They do not like singing Zmiris. Should we be pushing singing during the Suda anyway because that's the minhag of Kol Yisrael, or just wait until after benching and sing alone? Go ahead.
First of all, you had me already on the first line of the question. My children love our Shabbos table. I don't, do we, I don't even know if we need to read the rest of the question. My children love our Shabbos, and we should all be zaycha to that. That's an amud. We should be zaycha that our children love our Shabbos table. And then the explanation is even more exciting. The schmoozing, togetherness, talking Torah or hashkafa. And I wonder what's in the et cetera. I wonder what's in there. I'm curious. Yeah. It sounds geshmak. What a geshmak a Shabbos suda. If your children don't like singing Zmiris, I certainly don't think that they should be forced to sing Zmiris. That's for sure. That goes without saying that we're not going to be machriach that they sing. I don't think that means that the father can't sing Zmiris. I don't know that we have to push off Zmiris after benching. I do think that part of what we're being machanecha with children is that we all could do the things that we do that are important to us. I don't think that necessarily you need to sing because it's a minig in Klal Yisrael. I think it's a good idea to sing because I want to sing. Because I, like Rabbi Kalish said in the beginning, I authentically want to sing. And I ask, and my child says, well, I don't like singing, so I'll be memayat the singing. And I'll do it for a short time. And I'll say, please bear with me. I'm going to sing for 2 minutes. But it's important for us to be able to raise children that could be soivel, something that they don't like. I want to tell you a pet peeve of mine. When you listen to music today, so you have a CD. Okay, I apologize. You're listening to music today, okay? A new album comes out. Okay? So you're listening to it. So some of the songs people like, and some of the songs people don't like as much. So I have this thing when I'm driving with my mishpacha, if someone says, skip that song, I don't skip it. I remember, sorry if it's dating myself, but I remember a time that you would have to like press fast forward for like 10 minutes to get to the next song. You remember? And I think there was something good about that. I think it was good that we learned that we don't have to be in optimum, ultimate entertainment 100% of the time. Some of the songs we liked very much, and some of the songs were just songs. Nobody thought of it. You remember back in the day, nobody was like, could you fast forward? Things had to be really bad to do that. But now, you just push a button, you're like, I don't want that one. I don't like that one. So we're sitting by the table, your children love the Shabbos Suda. Gevalda, your children love the Shabbos Suda. Your children don't like the singing so much? Okay. So you guys can schmooze with yourselves. I'm going to sing a Zemer. In a few minutes, we'll go back to the hour, et cetera, over here.
Amazing, amazing. I want to tell a story. I want to say also this question. Somebody to say, my children love our Shabbos table is a mic drop. And the story is over. My children like, it's just the whole end of Q&A. This, a person's may and my children like our Shabbos table. That's quite the epitaph for anybody's final, my children like my Shabbos table is what is our dream. My brother, every youngster here is to be say that Adis, my children. I didn't even get to the et cetera I sunshine saw. I didn't even, it's cool, they wrote why. I saw my children love a Shabbos table. Wow. I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you my own story that a mistake I made. And what Rai Sunshine said, that they're all different people, they're different dishes, they don't like every dish, but the father connects, Zemer is powerful, and the father has a slavos in the songs of Shabbos, so the father could sing at a communion time, make sure the food's served, that's beautiful. I want to say something interesting. In yeshiva, for many years, I had this thing that the younger guys aren't going to like the Zmiris. I saw they didn't sing Zmiris. So I would wait till the younger guys left the Suda. They were allowed to leave. So the beginning was love. And then the guys finished eating. They left the room. And then when they left, we did beautiful Zmiris. Very Dehaibin Zmiris. And the last 2 years, I realized I made a mistake. Nobody forced anybody to join, but let's sing Zmiris. Geshmak Zmiris, and they could talk and eat during the Zmiris. I had a week where I didn't sing, and a guy who never joined said, why didn't you sing Zmiris? He was liking it. He was liking it, not singing in the back talking, but he liked Mund, why didn't you sing? And it's pushed by me that it impacts even the ones not singing. I would say to this father, and I saw this, now we sing always because we like singing. And at the right early in the Suda, and everybody's there, and the younger guys are there, and they hear a song. And while he's talking, it's like background. He's here in Kari Bainolam, and people like it a lot. I have a chiddush with a lot of things. I'll give the following mashal. The campus by us is beautiful. And there are a certain type of person who likes aesthetically nice things. It's a very sensitive, sophisticated soul. Eitan Shapiro, I'm close to him, he's a very sensitive, sophisticated soul. He likes nice things, and he likes the beauty of the campus. So a certain percentage like that the campus looks pretty. There are many guys who don't seem to actively, openly notice it. My chiddush is that it still makes a difference. Beautiful scenery and beautiful sights around, even to the ones who don't actively express appreciation, I think it makes a difference. There's a certain yeshiva das, a certain behavior. I want to say, my father says on his siblings, him and his siblings are all B'nai Torah. Their parents, my grandfather left yeshiva at 13. My grandmother was in public school. Many of their friends' kids were not Shomer Torah mitzvahs. All their children are B'nai Torah. My father says that the Tata used to sing in the car on family trips, and he thinks that was a big impact. I say to this father, don't underestimate, certainly sing, because you get excited by your Zemra at the convenient time. That doesn't make a delay, and you're not forcing the children to sing. You're singing to Hashem. Don't underestimate that your kids might even ask you, 1 week you didn't sing, Dad, why didn't you sing? I even have this weird thing. My kids are here. I'm like afraid to ask them because my voice, and now they certainly sing along, and when they were younger, they didn't necessarily sing along. I even think with my funny voice that they liked it. Dad is singing. He's excited. I have to ask them. You could ask them yourself. But you know what? Dad's singing. He's into it. He's excited. And there's nothing wrong, there's everything right with that, and I think it leaves a bigger impact than you think, because you're excited about it, because you're connecting, because you're, so certainly there's a minig Yisrael to sing Zmiris, but a song brings out a slavus and an energy, the Tata likes singing. I think there's everything right with singing a beautiful Zemer. I have a picture of my grandfather at the Shabbos table. I would go over on Friday nights, and he had like these chants. Everybody was schmoozing nicely, and he was doing the chants. I can't say everybody was joining the chants, and people were talking. But it's a beautiful memory of his chants that he was doing. I think over time that our children, I'm a composer of tunes, because even when I sing no known tunes, I do it my way. So I'm a shtickle composer with my own chants and attempts at the tunes. But you know what? There's a slavus going on when it's done in the right way. Certainly, like all these things that shouldn't change. My children love our Shabbos table. What's wrong if Dad's also having fun and also plugging in? So
the hour's late. Do we have time for another two? Okay, maybe we'll go with the question that if you had the right answer to this question, I think every yeshiva would pay a lot of money for it. But zero chinuch stories or gadol books have ever mentioned a youngster being impacted by a mechanach enforcing rules and discipline. It's usually a kind gesture or experience of the mechanach building a meaningful connection with the youngster. Question is, how does a mechanach balance maintaining structure and discipline that is necessary for a school to run, while at the same time making a positive impact on youngster schools?
That's a fun question.
I was about to say, it's fun, and I held myself back.
God, this I want to talk about. I would answer this and run, because this this is really a theme, something that maybe for me, like anything that I'd love to give over tonight, I'd like this to be the last thing that I speak about. There's a book, I'm curious if Rai Sonnenschein has read the book. There's a book, a very interesting, the Ron Clark Academy. The Ron Clark Academy, there's a guy in Atlanta, Georgia, who has a school, a movie is, I was told there's a movie about this school. You always post there, and I was told. I happen not to have seen it. And there seems other books about this school, the Ron Clark Academy. When I read the book, I read the book cover to cover about his school. I called up Rabbi Aaron Wilk, somebody who learned in Waterbury, somebody who's a great educator, and he, like, right away, of course, heard of Ron Clark. Now, he feels that schools are too dry, and he has a school that's full of discipline, by the way. He balances discipline and fun, and it's a school that produces quite well, called the Ron Clark Academy. Now, he has a lot of, I like chaos and energy, and they do a lot of stuff there. It's interesting to read Ron Clark's idea. There's an aspect that bothers me a lot, and I want to share it with the chevra. He has teachers, they jump on tables. It's a very disciplined school, by the way, but they don't jump. He's very into, a teacher has to jump on the table. He jumps table to table teaching, and they do a lot of wild stuff, and I don't like it. And I don't like it at all because I like real. That's not chinuch. Me and you have a soul that wants Hashem, and all our children have a soul that wants Hashem, a soul that's craving Hashem, all of us. We're not 50-50 propositions. We're souls that want Hashem. That's what we are. We have all different aspects to ourselves. The Yetzirah is an aspect that's meant to be used by the soul to serve in the right way and place. When we are connected, I'm all for energy and passion and Simchas Achayim, but the word authentic, natural, and comfortable, real, authentic. And the reason we could be authentic is we're talking to people who are craving Hashem, craving God. And we could just comfortably look somebody in the face at all ages and stages and be real. The youngest ages, I think about Rabbi Yechiel Shon. I think about a Rebbe who just looks in a kid's face, respects all his Talmidim, and is honest and real and authentic. And I think that's missing from the Ron Clark experience, jumping on desks, flying around. If what you're teaching is authentic, why are you working so hard? Like, do you talk about anything like that? Do you relate in that way? People are real and authentic. You can mamish bond in a profound and deep and energetic and meaningful way because you're talking things that are real to you, and it's real to. Why am I saying all this to this question? Because of course there has to be the questioner. I don't want an external trying to make discipline, but trying to make fun. If you're in the Ron Clark game, then the answer to this question is read Ron Clark's book. And he'll tell you all the tricks, how to jump on tables so it's fun, and how to discipline so it's tough. He's great at that game. I say don't play that game. Drop the whole game and be authentic. Be authentic and real. Of course, in any relationship, there can't be chaos. Has to be normal. But you're not playing a game. This I detect in this question, how does a mechanech balance, maintain? Even in the beginning of the question where he says that no chinuch stories or gadol books have mentioned it, don't try to be in a gadol book or a chinuch story. Please. That's the worst thing, that your chinuch, I don't know what gets in gadol books or not. That shouldn't be any part of our thoughts, what gets in a gadol. Be you. Be an authentic, the best, I beg mechanchem, be you in your classroom. The best thing to be in your room is you. I look around this room, we have amazing mechanchem. What they have is they present self. The question gets me very, like, nervous. How does a mechanech do a little of this and do some? He's doing way too much and reading, and then getting the book too. The way, whoa. Stop getting in books. Ron Clark is very busy. The media is always by him. Because he has to make events big and crazy and do all those things. I love the quiet day in yeshiva, just quiet. And a Rebbe's looking at a guy in the face and they're talking. Two people talking and conversing. And there's meaning and purpose. It's so gorgeous. A Rebbe, a Yid came to the yeshiva, mechanech, without asking before, showed up to yeshiva and sat there for a day. And he was judging the yeshiva and deciding what it is, what it isn't. And he told me that in my life, I'd never seen eyes locking between students and Rebbeim like I see here. Because people aren't playing parts. People aren't playing parts. I watch Rav Glazer learn with the Bacher, they're learning together, two people, human beings. I detect, in the, how does a mechanech do this and stop doing this and doing that? Do you. Doing too much. Now, of course, there has to be disciplines in every relationship. With your own kids, the best is the natural self, is present yourself comfortably, healthily, relationship. I think in the classroom, I know it's hard, and there's a lot we ask, a mechanechim, a lot. Please, I beg in the institution, v'shinantam levanecha, a person teaching another, don't lose the humanness. The person teaching, so the question just begs doing too much. Present you now as yourself, of course. There's discipline needed, there's structure needed, because every person in our own lives need that. But I ask to be yourself. I don't want the Ron Clark system. Now, chiyus is important. When we find the areas we're passionate, we'll have tremendous chiyus. We're zeicher to teach Torah, we're zeicher to teach Ruchnis, we're zeicher to teach people. So even any subject in the world you're teaching, let alone the person teaching in Yanei Ruchni, but we're zeichet to be learning Torah with Yiddish children, there's a chiyus to that on its own. So that creates the chiyus, the care, the love that's there. Tap into that. Tap in. Bring yourself into the room. Bring yourself. I'll tell you that 2 weeks ago, I walked into a room, a dorm room, and a very awkward exchange with the room. It wasn't comfortable. I was like, and I realized after I didn't bring my, I had a lot on my mind. I was playing something in the room. I wasn't me. And I felt the awkwardness. I wasn't me. I did not go in the room. I was playing. I was playing something. There are plenty of guys imitate me and do a very good job imitating. But I was imitating me better than anybody. I imitated me. I once, early in the yeshiva, a bacher, had I know a guy imitated me, I called the bacher up, and I say to the guy, I say, hello. He said, who is this? I said, Daniel Kalish. He said, shut up. So I thought somebody was imitating me. But Lemaisa, I walked into that room. I was imitating me. I wasn't being present. And I say to us all, mechanchim, please don't imitate you. Go into the room and be you. Be you. The question is too much for me because I think in such a question, it's my own weakness, but I picture somebody losing themselves. Go in the room. Be a healthy presentation of you. So I thank everybody. I want to thank Rav Gavriel. He's a class, a dignified person who is an understanding and a sophisticated person. I thank him for asking the questions, organizing the questions. I thank Rabbi Wisnicki for organizing this whole night. I want to hear Rabbi Sanchin. Yeah. I want to mention Rabbi Wisnicki's father is here. There's like a lesson on chinuch. This would be the dumbest thing not to mention. Like if you just want to see chinuch, you see the relationship, father and son, the ava, the band, the closeness, the understanding. It's like really, really something beautiful to witness. We should turn this. I hope you're able to see it. I should walk up. Let them see. Yeah, I thank everybody. I want to hear. We'll hear the Rub speak about either this question or this and the last question you're going to ask. We'll hear from my son and Shanshli.
I think we'll end with this. The truth is that I think that this nekuda about bringing your authentic self is really the end of the night. Just something occurred to me while Rabbi Kalish was talking about the question. And I think it just brings up something that as parents and as mechanchim we have to keep in mind. And I want to say it by asking Akasha. The Gemara talks about somebody that that the Gemara criticized that he was doichef b'shtei yodayim in chinuch. He pushed with two hands. So the Gemara says, la'olam yehei smoil doiche v'yamin makarev. I think that's the Lashon HaGemara, right? Smoil doiche v'yamin makarev. Why doesn't it say La'olam Yehei Yamin Makarev Usmael Doicha? I think that's a valid question. Is there anybody that thinks that the Iker is the smile doicha? I mean, there's a reason the Gemara calls it the smile. That the Yad smile is always to help the Yad Yamin. The Yad Yamin is the Iker Kayach. So it's really, Olam Yehe Yamin Mekarev who smile doicha. So I want to say, it could be it's a chiddush in the Gemara, but it's not a chiddush in Chinuch. I want to say that the Gemara is not talking about the Yamin Mekarev. Of course there's Yamin Mekarev. The Gemara is saying, "La'olam yehi smile daicha v'yamin makarev." The yamin makarev is in the smile daicha. A person shouldn't be daicha the smile without a yamin makarev, and that's something that we forget sometimes. I forget it sometimes as a mechanech, and it's important to remember. We think sometimes that there are two ways of interacting with a child or with a talmid. One way is with love, and the other way is with strictness. And I should use the tone I used when I said love when I'm saying strictness. There's nobody in chinuch that will say, you should always say yes and everything goes. There's nobody that will say that. And of course, chinuch is about, on some level, creating boundaries. But we live in a world today, unfortunately, that when we hear boundaries, we don't hear boundaries, we hear boundaries. Yeah, of course I have to love my child, but I also have to create boundaries. No, stop. I could love my child and create boundaries. I could say no in the right way. I could tell my Talmud, I want to point out something that was bothersome today. Mussar is meant to be given over with the same lashon. And it's a toast. It comes up in Shalom Bayis. It comes up in a lot of things that we think that we have to say the difficult things in a difficult way. And if we could learn to be mezgaber on that, and to say sometimes difficult things have to be said, but if we could learn how to say difficult things in a gentle way, so that a lot of this kasha is nisyashev me'elov. Of course, there needs to be maintaining structure and discipline. But how is that taking away from the positive impact? In fact, even the beginning with the chinuch stories and gadol books, and I appreciate Rabbi Kalish's reminder that's not our goal in life to be published, authors. It's not like that part of your resume as a yid is if you matched or if you were zeicha to a chinuch story or a gadol book, but. I would suggest that it could be there are a lot of stories of enforcing rules and discipline. You didn't notice it. You thought that was the love stories. You read the love story. You didn't realize it was discipline. You didn't realize that the mechanech was giving a compliment and you learned and grew and limited something in your life because of it. You didn't see that the gentleness with which the mechanech put his arm over his talmid's shoulder and spoke from the heart in a vulnerable way, that was a boundary. So that's a very important thing to keep in mind, and it brings me back. And I really think the night should end with Rabbi Kalish's points. I want to just bring us back there. And that's, you know, that when I said to be vulnerable, it really needs that. If I am not comfortable with myself and I'm not comfortable with what I'm doing, so then I need to put on the voice. I need, sometimes we say difficult things in a difficult way because we toughen ourselves up to say it. We have to work on ourselves to be ourselves, as Rabbi Kalish is saying, to be our authentic selves. And if something is hard to say, what would be so terrible to sit down with a Talmud sometimes and say, this is hard for me to say, but I love you. So I'm going to say it, but please understand, this was hard. I'm uncomfortable saying this, but I'm saying this because I love you. That's a smoil deicha, v'yamin makarev. That's a setting down a midas adin, a boundary, a ha'ara, a musar, with the yamin makarev, and without what Rabbi Kalish said about bringing your authentic self there, you don't have the kalim for it. We have to be able to be our vulnerable, authentic selves. It doesn't mean saying too much. It's a let's all those things. That's not what it means. It means that when I'm there, I'm prepared to be imperfect me in the room, present in the moment, taking in what's happening around me, not expecting to be 100% right all of the time, and prepared to try to do my best and being happy with the fact that I did my best. And I'm living here, and it's an interaction, and my Talmidim learn from me, and even more so, I learn from them. And then I think a lot of the kasha melts away. Let's make boundaries. Of course, let's make boundaries. I'm saying this with Rabbi Kalish next to me, by the way, who has told me this. We've discussed this many, many times. It's a myth. If there's anybody here who's thinking that, what, Rabbi Kalish doesn't hold of that, ask Rabbi Kalish. You're free to ask him. That's not the, I don't even want to say the shita, that's not the etzem, that's not the vart here. The vart here is the authenticity, that's the vart. The vart is to be real. The vart is to say things the way they are. The vart is not to have superficial boundaries. The vart is not to look at things because I'm afraid of what other people think. One of the things that I respect the most when I go to the Masifta is that nothing changes because I or anyone else went in there. I love the story about someone who came to check out the yeshiva for a day, because I am sure, maybe there were some people here who were there, I am sure that the yeshiva just went on. You know, maybe guys went over and said hello to this person, because that's what you do when you're in the Masifta. You go over and say hello to this person. But there was whatever goes on in the Masifta. And there's Lebedika things, and some of the days are quiet days, and some of the days are Lebedik days. I used to have the schus to be there twice a week, and it's a nourishing and eye opening place to be. But nothing ever happened there because I was there, and that's what's so special about it. It's just us. Now a mechanech from the depth of his heart, because he really loves his Talmud, feels like he has to tell his Talmud, I don't think that's healthy for you. I don't think that's the right thing. That's not just a small deicha. That's a small deicha v'yamin makariv. Yashikayach, thank you again to Rabbi Kalish, and thank you for everyone who stayed. Thank you to Rabbi Gavriel and Rabbi Yosef, and we should be zeicha to see tremendous, tremendous nachas from our kindlech, and very